Well, church is a good place to be. You come with your beliefs that you have about the world and yourself and your God or not God, and the minister stands up front and tells you that everything you believe is absolutely correct, and you feel comforted and secure, and you go home knowing all is well. Church is a very good place, isn't it? Something happened to me when I was 16 or 17, I forget which, and I was in a conservative church and hadn't been to church, so I didn't have, I really didn't have a net or a structured belief system, or I would say the propagandized story already internalized in me. So when I was told that God loved me and asked if I loved God, I had this experience of being loved and loving. It had nothing to do with a particular set of beliefs. And to me, not having beliefs or pre-established set of beliefs about religion or God, I didn't need for that experience to be encased in a particular belief system. It was just an experience, bodily experience, that was good, and that was wonderful, and that became the foundation of my spiritual life. Well, at least church spiritual life. Certainly, I ran through the woods and played by the river and caught turtles and stuff like that, which is another aspect of spiritual life. That did something, though, because what that did was that no matter what beliefs I heard, or what stories I heard, or how I was being evangelized by others, or talked to by others about what was right and what was wrong, all of that always got measured against that experience. If what I was hearing did not facilitate movement and affirm that experience, I didn't take it in, or I would question it. It didn't make sense to me. And then as I grew in my thinking and my education, I began to understand that any sound, reasonable religious belief system needs to be of the quality that leads you past that belief system. That a good, healthy spiritual life does not have a belief system that's capturing in an absolute. A good, healthy belief system is a belief system that leads you to the experience of love and allows you to let go of the belief system. So you are not captured by language, but you are affirmed by your bodily experience. Every once in a while in life, if you're lucky, a truth comes your way that is disruptive, revelatory. And this particular truth is not a truth you can grasp. It's a truth that will take you a lifetime to understand and to wrestle with if you ever do fully understand it. In fact, your life becomes a process of understanding that truth, to study that truth, to see what others have to say about that truth. The truth becomes one, if not central, to the very ground of your sense of self and who you are. Sometimes you're in the presence of a truth, and it slips by you. You're busy, you're worried, your mind races, you've got places to go, you're looking for something else. It's like a shooting star when you're with a person and next to a person, and you're both watching a star-filled night, and your mind is full of the next day. Your companion says, "Wow, did you see that? Man, that was real. That's the longest shooting star I've ever seen." And you say, "Huh? What?" Truths go by us. Now, this particular, and some things I say today, and as we've been looking at an idea in our culture, and the title of this sermon is part two, and last week was, do you know your place? Do you know how to get into your place? And do you know how to stay in your place? Do you know your place? Some things I say today I'm going to hope will be true. Some things I say won't be true, but I believe they're true. How many of you believe things 5 years ago that you knew were true, and today, I don't know if that's true. Hopefully all of us. Hopefully all of us. And some things will be partially true. But my guess is, knowing myself, I'm going to speak as if they're all absolutely true. So be gracious and forgiving. But this particular truth that I'm going to say now is going to be hard to believe, especially as we look around the room. But this truth is, there is no such thing as a woman. Now, I drove to church with a woman today. So I'm thinking, what in the world am I saying, and how? What kind of meaning does that have? And especially, what kind of meaning does that have when we're talking about, do you know your place? Do you know your place? And here comes thinkers, psychoanalytical thinkers, feminist thinkers, and people who take on the big ideas about life and the big ideas about history. And one of the conclusions that they have made is that there is no such thing as a woman. No such thing as a woman. You see, what it means, and believe you me, I know I'm on treacherous ground here. And I understand that. I understand that. But there does seem to be some truth to this, in that what it means to be a woman in our culture, in Western civilization, and as a matter of fact, in Eastern, more, however you could be more civilization than Western civilization, but it seems to me it's transcultural, that what it means and what it has meant in history to be a woman has been defined by what it has meant to be man. And that what it means to be a woman is not self, is not an act of self-agency. It's not an independent process. It is a process in comparison to what it means to be man. And throughout history, the definition of woman by man who dominates culture, would say that woman is lacking something. And therefore, she is not quite right, as the man would say. Theologically, I had a hard time even reading some of the definitions and some of the ideas about women that men have pressed upon women for women to know their place. The great theologian, that's sarcasm, the great theologian, Tertullian, has this to say about women. Now, remember that in Western civilization, the principles of monotheism and Christianity are consciously and unconsciously in the foundational tapestry of who we are as a people. God's sentence hangs over the female sex, and His punishment weighs down upon you. You are the devil's gateway. You first violated the forbidden tree and violated God's law. You shattered God's image in man. And because you merited death, God's Son had to die.
Well, that's a friendly way of thinking.
Aristotle declares, it is as if a woman were an infertile male. Male is male by virtue of a particular ability, and a female is a female in virtue of a particular inability. And on and on it goes. Now, this is capturing and know your place, not just for women, but also for men. Because in order to keep something captive, and this is what this is about ownership of the woman's body, ownership of the woman's life, telling the woman who and how to be in order to fill a certain particular, being a particular way in society to perpetuate a society, and it's got nothing to do with woman. There's no such thing as a woman. There is only this being that is groomed to be something other than what she actually is. So now, when I first read that statement, it didn't make a lot of sense to me, but now it's starting to make sense to me that there is a distortion and a distortive process going on. But any time you have to keep something captive in order to maintain power, you are also captive. Because now you've got to tend to that system that where there is this captive. So I'm not free as a man either, and you're not. So here we are living here. My concern is twofold. One is selfish. I don't want to spend my life being captured in a way that captures. I don't want that for myself. So I, up front, there's a selfishness to it. I want to be free. The other is, I don't want to be hurtful to others. If this is a truth about our culture, and I think it is, and I heard a lot of verbal affirmations that there are women here who think this is also truth, and I'm have been trained to be in this culture as a male, that means I participate in this process. I don't necessarily know how I participate in this process and first learning that this is going on, but I believe that I do because it does seem to be true. And so I further read. Then I think, well, how can this possibly be? How can this happen? And then reading in the same body of literature that, and thank God, I don't know where you are, but thank God we do live in a society, and thank God there are feminists, male, female feminists that write, that look, that step out of culture, that look at culture, that analyze it, that talk to us, that teach us to say, hey, we are all captured in this process, and if we're participating in this process, none of us have freedom, none of us have life. And they further, and they go on, they say, something happened in the patriarchal structure that sooner or later there was this movement from birth and there's this movement between these two beings, that this mother giving birth and the rhythms of the birthing process and the rhythms of two bodies and two bodies being held in a comfort and a movement that's good and that's healthy. And somewhere down the line, somebody interjected the idea that we are to reject that. That we are to believe this abstract belief system out here, whatever it might be, and this process, the first years of our lives, are not to be informative of how we live. Like, whoa, wait a minute. What does that mean? How does that work? I mean, recently, I don't know if you recall this one, Barack Obama was going to pick a Supreme Court person and said, well, this person needs to have the capacity of empathy. Remember that? Mm-hmm. I thought, yeah, about time. A little empathy. Do you remember the country's response to that?
Yeah.
That's what I'm talking about right here. That's it. Empathy is a bodily felt thing. And here's your story. My mind and my body moves in hearing your story. And as I define empathy, a little different. Not only do I learn about you, but there is action that is completed in what I learn about you in an act of care. Empathy is a process that begins with learning something about you I did not know and moves me to in an act of care, acting upon the knowledge that I got. If I don't include that last part of the act of care, what I've seen in our culture is we can use empathy to learn about you and use it against you. This is abuse of culture. For this reason, I believe, we reject the maternal, the earth, the body, and we label it as no good, to be of use, anything. Hey,
Pastor, we do that. We're not a death-oriented culture. We're not abusive to people. This is America. Then I just look at 3,000 years of history, I think. We're pretty death-oriented. I mean, we would like to cry freedom and civil liberties and all those good things and put on clothes that aren't there and say we're dressed in freedom, we're dressed in liberty. Maybe we need to give the children a greater voice in looking at us and telling us what they see. We are a death-oriented culture. Helen and I were talking, this not woman, I'm confused. See, it's true, it's what's true, I don't know. You know, and how am I to relate? Am I relating to the people I love and I care for in such a way that it perpetuates and prevents the true expression of what it would mean to be a woman? That I unconsciously and consciously oppress? I need to learn how that works. And so I forgot what I was going to say. Helen and I were talking about it. It'll come back to me. But I'm glad to be informed by a woman. Back to that spiritual experience of love and having that be a bodily experience, a felt experience, I think gives one greater strength not to be captured by a belief system, not to be captured by patriarchy, but to know that there's something other than that. When we have a culture that's filled with a symbol system that does not allow this true expression of what it means to be woman and what that adds to us as a species, and that is hindered, rejected, and blocked, does seem to move us into a death culture. Now it's come back to me. We were talking about the medical practice and medical profession in our community. And it occurred to me that not all of the medical profession, and certainly I've experienced good doctors who don't, and we know Stephen Blythe who's not this way, but not all, but it does seem to me in general that the medical profession is no longer, or partially, no longer a medical profession. Because if I have a medical need and I go to a medical center and say I have this medical need, it will be responded to medically. Medical profession. But if I have a medical need and I go to this building and I say, here's my social status, and in my social status, I don't have insurance, they say, you can't come in. That's no longer a medical profession or a medical practice. That's an economic system. And it's okay if you go away. And I'm not saying all doctors and all medicines like this, but there is a point. We have congressional testimony of people saying they turned down people for care that had every right and contractual right to get care, and they turned them down and they were rewarded for turning them down, and many of them died. I mean, that's congressional testimony. I'm not making that up. When that happened, it affirms that we have a death-oriented culture. Because for money, it's okay if you die. So, these feminists are saying, wait a minute. Let's stop a minute. If we were to start our cultural foundations with the birthing process and the bodily kinesthetic experience of comfort and resting in one's own body, being comforted in that primary caregiver's process, and we just carried that on, and rather than saying no to that, and let's build a culture that's based on a dissociative process. Let's build a culture that rejects empathy, that moves toward greed. Let's not do that, but let's move through. We indeed could change the direction of ourselves as individuals, as I relate to people I care about in my love. We could redirect our church community. We could redirect the larger communities that we are involved in, and rather than be oriented toward death, affirming the dissociative process that we go through and that orients us to be a subject in this society, that we can indeed heal ourselves and move through that and then begin to move toward a life that's life-directed, that affirms life, that affirms the human relationship, that affirms the value of what it means to be good to one another, that affirms the value of saying we want our Supreme Court justices to have the capacity of empathy. We want our legislative leaders to have the capacity of empathy. We want our local leaders to have the capacity of empathy. We want ourselves to have the capacity of empathy as we relate to one another. So our spiritual journey is somehow to have that bodily experience of being cared for and a sense of being loved and being able to love fully. That there is a possibility we can get off that track that's death-oriented and we can step onto a way of life that's life-oriented. As human beings, it seems to me, that is our place. And if we're on the other track, we're out of place. So this is an invitation to help each other to find our place and to figure out how to be kind to ourselves and to others.